I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
Before we get into our main feature, how's that WandaVision finale? Let's do our non-spoilery.
Yeah, non-spoilery. Don't freak. I thought it was pretty good. I liked it.
I liked it as well. It ended how I thought it would end. I feel bad for everyone who had all those wild and crazy theories that didn't end up coming true.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. I do have a tiny little bit of a nit to pick with the creators, if you'll indulge me a moment.
Sure.
There's been a lot of backlash about people who are like, well, I didn't feel that it ended where I was expecting, or, you know, whatever. There are, throughout the series in general, a lot of things that are now, according to the creators, intentional red herrings. I won't be any more specific than that. So their intention was to throw people off, was to lead people in one direction and then pull the rug out from under them. And I'm going to say, don't freaking do that. If you look at a piece of fiction and you go, I didn't see that coming, and looking back, I don't really know how we got here, that's when you get a problem. You know, everybody talks about, you know, Game of Thrones and Lost and stuff. I'm with you on that. I was not pleased with that either. But there are also things where they said they changed things in the middle of WandaVision. They decided to go a different way, and then they just didn't take out the earlier bits that were leading up to reveals that they never filmed.
And from some perspective, I can see is that intentional confusion. They wanted the audience to have the same confusion that the characters in the show were. And when that happens, when you do it correctly, it's great. Because you go on that emotional journey with the characters as they're experiencing them. And when it's not that good, there's a lot of groaning and complaining of what we got. So I can understand what the creators were going for. And I understand the complaints of certain people who watched.
Yeah. Not all complaints are created equally. Let's just go ahead and say that. Some people are wildly off base with the things that they're taking issue with. But I do feel that we have prioritized the surprise ending. The, oh my god, I didn't see that coming. Whereas, I don't think that that's the holy grail of storytelling that people think it is. I think people should be able to follow your story, and if they are paying close attention and they are putting two and two together, it should equal up to four at some point.
And then there are people who don't like when what they consider to be the obvious resolution happens. So it's a situation where there are people who will never be happy with whatever you produce.
Yeah, and those people you just can't care about. You've got to, as a creator, I think, just be cognizant of the fact that some people will never be happy with what you give them. And those people, I don't think that you can worry about. I know that's difficult. And I mean, I find it difficult, you know. But I think that just, no matter what you do, you're not going to please some people. And you're only going to make a worse product if you try.
Also, this show is called WandaVision. If you came into this expecting anything else than a show about Wanda and Vision, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I was really pleased that we kept the focus on Wanda and also Vision. But this was always meant to be Wanda's story, and it was always meant to be a personal story about emotions and how you deal with emotions. And honestly, in that sense, nailed it. Anyway, it's good. Thumbs up for both of us. Go watch it if you haven't. Yeah.
When this was all announced, you thought that Elizabeth Olsen would be the weak link in this show, and she has really shown not only her as a comedic actress, but her as a dramatic actress in this show.
I have never been more happy to be wrong. I will own it. They did not... It is obvious now that the stuff they gave her in Avengers and Captain America and all that, they were not using her to her full potential. She was excellent in this. So, you know, I take back everything I said in the past. I was proven wrong and I am happy. So, good for her. Love her. I'm a fan now.
All right, so yes, WandaVision, thumbs up. If you haven't seen it yet, go see it. And, you know, now as this episode is airing, we're getting ready for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is, I think, is going to be more of what traditional Marvel fans are looking for. And that's going to be more of their action-centric show. And, you know, it's not like there's another superhero thing that's going to be debuting on a streaming service this week that would have more... importance or anything, right? Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just gonna say, I want, just to kind of spite the sort of fans who've been causing all the problems, I want Falcon and Winter Soldier to be advertised as the big action show, and then I want it to be just about two men going to therapy. I want it to be just as emotional a show as WandaVision was. I just really want it to be about two men working through their emotions about a third man. Disney, give me what I want. Come on. Come on. I have been here for you, all right? I am here for the duration with this company. Just give me this one thing.
Maybe Loki be more your speed. I don't know.
I also want Loki to just be about, like, a really surly guy learning not to be so surly and, like...
Working out the issues he has with his brother.
Yeah, working out his daddy issues. I just want an entire Marvel series where they all get together with, like, Doc Samson on a therapy couch. It worked for the Hulk. Come on, Peter David made that work for the Hulk. I want to see it for the rest of I want to see it for the MCU. Get Peter David in and just write, like, a whole series of Marvel goes to therapy movies.
You can still film it in, all you need is two actors. The guy playing Doc Samson or whoever the therapist is and whoever actor you can bring in, you know?
Yeah, it just needs to be, like, one set, you know, a therapist couch, two actors. That's it. Anyway, we should get to the movie instead of my fantasy therapy.
Kiki, life is like a hurricane here in Duckburg. Race cars, lasers, airplanes. It's a duck blur. You might solve a mystery.
Or rewrite history!
DuckTales! Woo!
Yes, as the reboot DuckTales is coming to an end, as this episode is being released, the 90-minute series finale is set to air on Disney. Oh, I wish that show had another season.
I would rather a show be shorter and go out on top than, you know, Zombie Simpsons or whatever we got now.
So, yeah, as we are going with... This was actually not planned. This was already set on this date. It's just that, hey, DuckTales is ending. Let's tie it all together.
Yeah.
So yeah, we are doing DuckTales the movie, Treasure of the Lost Land. We are looking back at the old DuckTales, OG DuckTales. You became a really big fan of the new DuckTales, more specifically Kate Micucci as Webby and her characterization of as Webby.
Oh my goodness, so much.
And then coming back to Russie Taylor's Webby.
I'm going to say that looking back, one of the first things I realized was I had kind of forgotten that all four kids are done by one person. It's all Russie Taylor. The absolute incredible talent of Russie Taylor. However, because they're all done by one person, I always wondered why I could never keep Huey, Dewey, and Louie apart. And I think it's because all three of them were voiced by Russie Taylor in the original show.
They're also the same personality. Yeah, they're completely interchangeable.
Yeah, whereas I really respect that in the new show, they're not. They each have their own very distinct personality and very specific way that they fit into a plot. And Webby, in the original series, and especially in this film, she was just the girl. You know, we've talked about that archetype before in 80s and 90s cartoons. I'm the adventurous one. I'm the shy one. I'm the bookish one. And I'm the girl. You know, it's... And Webby was the girl. New Webby is all sorts of things, one of which happens to be a girl. But she's got personality traits you can name other than that. She's adventurous. She's a little scatterbrained. She's a bit violent. In the old series, she's the girl. She does girly things. She wears pink and has tea parties and plays with dollies. Thus endeth the entire characterization of Webby in the original series. And it really shows through in this movie, as we will see. You want to get into the background of this a little bit? Or
yeah, so we've talked a little bit about Disney Afternoon stuff. DuckTales, by far, was the most popular show on the Disney Afternoon at the time. And they made the decision, oh, let's make a movie out of DuckTales. And this was the first movie to be made from the TV animation studio, who would eventually make all of the direct-to-video movies that we had during our teen years.
They did this primarily in the Paris studio, which they had set up after Who Framed Roger Rabbit. We had talked about in that episode that they sent a lot of the animators to the London studio that they had just opened. After that turned out to be such a big hit, they decided to open another European location. They chose Paris. And this was one of the early things to be done at the Paris studio. This was also, just out on an animation thing, the last Disney feature to entirely use cel animation. There's no Xerox format in this. There's no computer effects enhancement. This is 100% traditional cel animation.
And this is also at a time where pretty much every popular cartoon had a movie. I mean, Transformers, My Little Pony, Rainbow Bright, you name it.
And that it was really just because the home video boom was really starting up and they were like, how do we take advantage of that? And this was how they took advantage of that. Let's take TV shows and we'll make an extra long episode, call it a movie, and sell it to the home video market. I really want to get into talking more about this movie, so let's go ahead and get the cast out of the way.
All right, let's talk about who's in it.
Most of these actors we have talked about before because they are, you know, Disney regulars. Of course, you have the amazing Alan Young as Scrooge McDuck. Up until David Tennant, this was the only voice you thought about for Scrooge McDuck, let's just be honest. Of course, best known for being Wilbur and Mr. Ed. We've talked more about him previously in Mickey's Christmas Carol, I believe. Russie Taylor, you know her best as the voice of Minnie Mouse for all those years. Also, she worked on the Simpsons quite a lot as well. So we have, as our main villain, we have Christopher Lloyd. You know him, you love him. Doc Brown, Reverend Jim. June Foray shows up for a little bit as Mrs. Featherby. We've talked about her over and over again. And as the genie, I believe we've talked about Rip Taylor before, haven't we?
I don't remember.
Well, in case we haven't, let's go into Rip Taylor since he's kind of the big one here. If you remember Rip Taylor, it's for him screaming and throwing confetti. That was his shtick. That's just what he did. You know, comedian, actor, showed up in all kinds of comedy bits. Around this same time, he ended up in the Addams Family cartoon series doing the voice of Uncle Fester.
Which is weird because we have cartoon Uncle Fester and movie Uncle Fester in this movie.
Yeah, we did. I didn't even think about that. Just a couple of the side characters here because we haven't really talked about them before. We've got Terrence McGovern as Launchpad McQuack. He did this in DuckTales and in Darkwing Duck. He did one of the Beagle Brothers as well in DuckTales. And Star Wars fans might be interested to know that he is credited with creating the word Wookiee. Apparently, the story goes that, like, Terrence McGovern and George Lucas were in a car one day and they hit a bump and McGovern turned around and said something about, oops, I think I just killed a Wookiee. And Lucas said, what's a Wookiee? And he said, I don't know, I just made it up. And George Lucas thought it was so funny that he, like, you know, wrote it in a notebook or whatever and turned it into a creature in a film he did later. As Duckworth, the butler, we have Chuck McCann. He was the voice of Sonny the Cuckoo Bird for a while. I'm Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. He really had an early success with a record that came out in the 60s called The First Family. My dad talks about this record all the time. It was put out to be a political satire of the then newly elected John F. Kennedy and family. So this was the early Camelot years and people being really into it. And there was this comedy album of people doing impressions of the various members of the family and making jokes about what life was going to be like under the Kennedy administration. And McCann was part of that. But, you know, he did a lot of animation later on in his career. He was the other two Beagle Brothers, as well as Duckworth. And he was also Dreamfinder in Journey into Imagination. As our final holdover from the actual television cast, as Mrs. Beakley, the housekeeper, we have Joan Gerber. Mrs. Beakley was one of her two kind of largest roles. The other one that people may know her from is Freddy the Flute in H.R. Puffin Stuff.
Another character that is completely different in OG DuckTales than she is in New DuckTales.
Yeah, Mrs. Beakley was very much in original DuckTales. She was just the housekeeper and sort of a motherly figure for the boys.
In the new series, she kicks butt.
In the new series, she's James Bond in a maid outfit. It's pretty awesome. And the last one I want to talk about real quick, because this was one of those things, you know, sometimes when we're doing our research for these things, we run across something and we go like, that is never, you know, I would have never guessed that. And this was one of these for me. As Dijon, who is the little sidekick to the villain, we have Richard Libertini, and he was a character actor that was in a lot of cool stuff, but two things that he did that I went like, oh my goodness, I know that guy, is, do you remember Tuesday that there was an episode of Deep Space Nine where a Bajoran poet who had disappeared like 200 years before came back through the wormhole and was like, I'm really the emissary of the prophets and Sisko can go home?
No.
Okay. It's a really famous episode of Deep Space Nine. For those of you who are huge fans of Deep Space Nine, he is that guy, Akoram Lan. He's the guy that comes through and challenges Sisko for his position as emissary and tells Kira that she has to become an artist and stuff. It's a great episode if you've never seen it. But the animation fans among you might remember that there was an episode of Animaniacs where the Animaniacs try to go find enlightenment, and they decide to go to the top of a mountain to find the great guru Wali Lama.
And it's the same voice.
It's the same voice. Lama, 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 Lama. And they ask him to ponder why hot dogs come in packages of 10 and hot dog buns only come in packages of 8. And he tries to figure out an answer, fails, and goes bonkers and, like, runs away.
I mean, going insane is the typical result of meeting the Animaniacs.
Yeah.
The Warner siblings.
Yeah, such a good episode. But yeah, I like that guy, and he is our little comedy sidekick in this one, so love it. In the background voices, we also have Charlie Adler, who we've mentioned before, and the great Frank Welker, who does all of the animal effects, and there are many in this movie.
I'm pleased that Disney kept the entire TV show cast for this movie.
Okay, on to plot.
All right, what one thing before we get into the plot proper is that I think I know why June Foray is here as Mrs. Featherby, because Magica the Spell is not in this movie, and that was her main character on the show.
Yeah,
and I guess they wanted her in the movie.
Well, who you always wanted June Foray in a movie?
Or yeah, a TV yeah, show. True.
I mean, true. If you were doing something with animation, you wanted June Foray, so I get it.
So, yeah, I was thinking when you said the Beagle Boys voice actors are in this movie and Magica's voice actors in this movie, would this movie have been better if it was just Magica and the Beagle Boys characters from the show versus new villains?
Ooh, I don't know. Let's get into the plot and answer that question at the end of it.
All right, so let's get into the main plot here. The main plot centers around Scrooge McDuck's search for treasure, which is 90% of the episodes in DuckTales, both the old and the new.
Yeah. Except this time, they're doing it in an Indiana Jones pastiche.
So anyway, yeah, this whole thing is just a pastiche of Indiana Jones. And Scrooge is on the lookout for the lost treasure of Kali Baba and his 40 thieves. Because you need a name pun.
Yeah, it all has to be animal name puns in DuckTales.
Because they're all animals. And animals who have animals as pets, and animals who have animals as, oh, it's the Mickey and Pluto thing all over again.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, they're going to the desert. They never say what country it is, but it's a country that has pyramids. But yeah, so they are looking for the lost treasure of Kali Baba. And they seem to have found it. People that work for Scrooge have found this treasure chest, and it ends up being laundry.
Yeah.
Kali Baba's dirty laundry, as Scrooge says.
But it is a pretty box.
It is a pretty box. I would keep the box. I would give the box to your kids. Here, have a new toy chest.
Yeah.
But they find
Webby is just there to be optimistic and say things are pretty. That's her whole point in this, opening.
Her whole thing is that she's an optimist.
Yeah.
She always looks at the bright side of everything, even if in a bad situation. But the boys find a treasure map in one of the robes in the treasure chest, and it's a map to where the actual location of the treasure of Kali Baba is. So their quest is not in vain. They just have to take a few extra steps. But Dijon, who is supposed to be their guide, has ulterior motives, that he's working for Murloc, who has been alive for centuries trying to search for the treasure of Kali Baba himself. Eventually they find it. I mean, he tells Dijon that he's going to stick around with them as a guide, despite Dijon being a complete, you know, coward. My skin is sensitive in the sunlight. My brain will boil.
No, my brain boils very easily, is what he said, and I loved that line, because I was like, yes, yes, I feel that.
As someone who gets nosebleeds when they're in the sun too long, I felt that. My brain does boil. So yeah, they're further out into the desert, Launchpad trips on a rock that he ends up being the pyramid, the secret hideout of Kali Baba. And they have to dig it up.
And Scrooge hands a shovel to Dijon. And at first you're like, well, he is paying Dijon. Okay, that makes sense. And then in the next scene, you see that the three boys and Dijon are the only people around trying to dig out this. And I was like, Scrooge, child labor is not cool, dude. I know you're like the ultra capitalist, but come on, man.
I mean, I know Scrooge McDuck is 1,000 years old, but at least Launchpad could have helped.
Yeah, yeah. There's the only adult doing any work is Dijon.
So yeah, in reality, that probably would have taken them weeks, if not months, to dig out the entire pyramid. But this is a movie, so one quick dissolve later and the entire pyramid's been uncovered.
Yeah, and it is a massive pyramid, too.
But yeah, they are able to get into the pyramid and looks like a recreation of the intro to the TV show.
But also it's a direct parody of the opening to Raiders of the Lost Ark entering the temple. They have to go through a bunch of traps. Comedy ensues from the traps.
And we get our running gag of the movie is, use your marbles. Good thing I brought some.
Yep.
So yeah, the kids are told to use their marbles from their junior what check guidebook, and they literally use their marbles to hit all the traps, and eventually they find the treasure room of Kali Baba. And they find all of these treasure. Scrooge says he's been looking for this treasure for 40 years. Dijon is there for obvious reasons. We'll get to it. But because he is the employee, he has to go get all the sacks to carry all the treasure out. And completely misses that Webbygail has found what she calls a teapot. Because girl, apparently.
Yeah, because girl. Yeah, it's very pretty, and she needs it for her tea set, for her tea party with her dollies, because girl.
Please, Uncle Scrooge, can I have this?
Yeah, not that I'm saying anything bad about tea parties or dolls or anything, because I did all that stuff, but that is her only character trait in this entire movie, and it is infuriating.
That's her entire character trait in the show.
Well, yeah. I was never a fan of old school Webby. That's just, no. But
imagine if current Webby met past Webby.
Oh. She did in one of the episodes where she sees a doll that's dressed up as old school Webby.
Mm. So anyway, I do have to give Webby credit, is that she uses the power of being the girl to her advantage. In that she wants the old oil lamp to be her teapot. And Scrooge looks at it's a worthless lamp. It's, you know, it's not worth even taking. Oh, I'll just take this really, really jeweled encrusted crown instead. Oh, no. You can have the lamp. Thanks, Uncle Scrooge.
Yeah.
She didn't care about that crown. She just wanted the lamp.
Yeah. I will give her points for being smart. This is pretty too. Girls like tiaras, right? That's a girl thing.
Yeah. Oh, can you imagine Webby with that crown playing princess in the house?
That would be awesome though. I would actually legit love that.
So yeah, they pack up the treasure and enter Morlock. Murloc, not Morlock. Morlock is something else entirely.
Still Murloc owned by Disney.
Yeah. Murloc grabs the treasure and he's going to trap the duck family in the treasure room, which also is covered in the bottom with giant scorpions.
I really like the design of the giant scorpions. Bravo to whoever designed that. They look awesome.
Yeah, they look freakish, especially for a Disney movie.
Yeah, I like it. So, they're good little, you know, scary trap villain things.
The basket that the treasure was in, they kind of make a shield out of it. Very obvious joke alert in that Launchpad says, turns the basket over saying, it's turtle time, and the kids say, quackabunga.
Yeah.
Disney was not above making fun of their competition.
Oh my goodness, I have to rant for just a second. Because you said that the quackabunga and stuff. This movie has the worst interjections. I hated every second of it. Because there's all these, like, words that they keep making up for the kids to say to try to sound cool. Yeah, wackaroony. I hated that by the end of this movie. I was like, if I never hear that word again.
That was your catchphrase in the show, was quackaroony.
I know, but I had forgotten that. Because I have not seen OG DuckTales in the longest time. And then, what's the thing the genie says?
Shibui.
Shibui. There's like every other word out of the genie's mouth is shibui. And it's just all throughout the movie, they just keep coming up with, you know, random things like that because they can't say, I guess they didn't want to have them say like cool or neato or nifty or any of the other random words that we used in the 90s.
You need a word that they can copyright and put on a t-shirt.
I guess, but
this is Disney we're talking about.
This is not it. None of these are it. They're awful.
So yeah, Murlock gets a treasure and he can't find the lamp. The lamp that we just saw Webby take.
Yeah, and Dijon had seen the lamp and that's why he went to go tell Murlock, like, hey, we found the lamp, but the lamp is not there because Webby took it when he wasn't looking.
Meanwhile, the duck family is using the basket now as a boat to get out of the cave, and successfully they are at the, and you know, as kids do, oh, can we go on that ride again?
It did kind of look like a fun ride.
Let's put that in Disneyland, you know?
I mean, honestly, it's kind of a combination of several rides in Disneyland. It was a bit of a roller coaster, you know. Part of it sort of looked like Space Mountain.
And Splash Mountain.
And Splash Mountain a little bit at the end there. Yeah, I mean, it looked pretty cool.
Can you imagine instead of, Song of the South characters, you would have had DuckTales characters in Splash Mountain?
That would have been awesome. I would have loved a DuckTales ride when I was a kid.
Yeah. But, Scrooge is kind of depressed because, again, 40 years of searching and he had the treasure in his hand and it's all gone. But, you know, cute little Webby, he's gonna give him the lamp, saying, well, here's part of the treasure. And no, Webby, this is yours, you can keep it. I'll find the treasure again. Even if it takes me another 40 years. One of the rare moments of Scrooge actually having a heart in this movie.
Well, I was going to say that I don't think Scrooge is letting Webby keep it because he's kind to Webby. I think he's letting Webby keep it because he thinks it's worthless. I think as we see later in the movie, if he for a second thought that that had any value, he would have taken it from Webby immediately without compunction, you know?
Yeah, again, OG Scrooge versus modern Scrooge.
Yeah, even modern Scrooge is way nicer than OG Scrooge.
So, yeah, back in Duckburg, Scrooge has been given an invitation to a explorer's ball that he cannot go. He cannot face the Explorer Society because he failed to get the treasure. Even though they keep on sending him invitations to come. It's like, no, every year I've been telling him I'm going to find it. And to face them now after I had it in my hands and I don't have it anymore. He didn't want to go to the embarrassment. Which you can understand from Scrooge's point of view. He's been saying for 40 years he's going to find it. And now that he had it, how can he face them again?
Yeah, it's just... And you know that Scrooge is the type of braggart that he was probably, like, sending notes to people in that, like, just wait for the banquet this year, I'm gonna have something that's gonna blow your minds.
In a pre-cell phone world, too. Imagine if Scrooge had a cell phone, him texting every single one of them.
Yeah, he would've...
It's in my hand. Him taking selfies with the treasure.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. He would be like, look at me with all this treasure. And then they'd be like, Photoshop.
Yeah. And the kids, they have the lamp, or Webby has the lamp. And Mrs. Beakley gives him some polish for the lamp, and Duckworth needs Mrs. Beakley to help him get the car because, as we just saw, Scrooge had a breakdown at work and is leaving work early because he cannot even be at work while knowing that he had the treasure and lost it.
Yeah, Scrooge just has a total meltdown. He's like, he also needs a therapist. Where is my DuckTales episode where Scrooge goes to a therapist to deal with his, like, greed?
He would pay the therapist to tell him what he wants to hear.
Oh, that would be awful.
Scrooge would do that.
Scrooge would do that, though.
So, yeah, so Webby is polishing the lamp with the... We never said what kind of polish it is. It's just polish. And the lamp starts moving. And the other kids rub the lamp, too, and it spouts out our genie, Rip Taylor. Let's just say that this was a good few years before Disney would do this similar movie.
Yeah, I was going to wait until the end of it, but I'm just going to tell you all, the rest of this movie is just Aladdin 2 years early and with ducks.
Yeah.
They already had to be working on Aladdin by the time this thing came out.
Yeah, you would think somebody would tell somebody, hey, maybe you might change the plot of your movie because we're already... The main studios are already working on this.
Yeah. But it is a very similar story from here on out.
Yeah. Though, Rip Taylor versus Robin Williams.
Yeah. Rip Taylor, unfortunately, loses massively in that comparison.
So, yeah. So, we have our genie, Rip Taylor, who has been trapped in the... Well, he's only been trapped for 1,000 years, as opposed to 10,000 years. And he wants to get reacquainted with the modern world, reading every book in Scrooge's library in a matter of seconds. That's an excuse for the genie to do pop culture references, which we don't have with the Robin Williams genie.
Yeah, but honestly, I'm not sure I ever really felt as a child that I needed a explanation for that. He's magic, that's the explanation. I did like the bit where he's in the kitchen and he, like, opens up the freezer and shoves his face in and he's like, ah, cold food storage. And then he... goes over to the mixer, the stand mixer, and he's like, rug beater? And they're like, no, egg beater. And he grabs one of the whisks and starts being like, back foul eggs! Which I absolutely love that joke. It's such a good...
So yeah, our duck children, they know what genies are, and they straight up said, hey, you have to give us some wishes.
Three apiece, yes. for the four children.
That's 12 wishes.
Yep, 12 whole wishes. But of course, they're children.
Well, first off, we get the rule. Apparently, the one of the... Because, again, to make this movie work, the genie has to have restrictions. So, this genie straight up says you cannot wish for more wishes. Because that's the first thing Louis wishes for is... He wishes for 1,000,000 wishes. Huey is the only smart one, as he says he wishes for world peace. And the genie says, I'm not a miracle worker.
Yeah, I like that we don't get any further explanation. He's just like, nope. There's several times where people make, like, big wishes in this movie, and the genie's just like, nah. And we get no further explanation. It's not like, well, that's against the rules or whatever. He's just like, no. Don't wanna.
He's a small genie. He's the size of a child. So maybe his power isn't fully developed. I don't know.
I don't know. We find out some of the things he did grant later, and I'm like, mm-hmm. I think now he's just, like, lying to people and telling them that he can't do those wishes anymore.
he saw what happened. He's like, no, I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
Kind of like Aladdin's genie. He's like, I can't bring people back from the dead. I don't like doing it. Yeah. Not that he can't. It's just he doesn't want to.
Yeah. We talked about that in our Aladdin episode, if anybody wants to go back and listen to that. But I like that what the children finally decide on.
I wish for a baby elephant. Because Webby would.
Yeah. And the world's biggest ice cream sundae. And then they add, but not too big, because he told them that big wishes lead to big trouble.
Yeah, he says that the bigger the wish, the more attention you get, and then everyone's going to want the lamp, and he'll be trapped again for another 1,000 years. So make your wishes small, and that way it stays under the radar. And then, yeah. Of course, Webby wishes for an elephant.
Well, but they live with the richest duck in the world. You know, I mean, granted, Scrooge would know, but anybody else that just saw Webby walking a baby elephant down the street, they'd be like, oh, Scrooge bought his niece a baby elephant.
You know how those rich people are.
Rich people gonna rich people.
And at this point, Mrs. Beakley walks in, spooks the elephant. The elephant spooks Mrs. Beakley, and she's like, based on her words, yeah, I would think Scrooge would think he's drunk because she says the word pink and elephant over and over again. Elephant is wearing a pink ribbon.
Yeah, it's got a pink ribbon on it. But this sparks Scrooge's interest of, like, what's going on here. And the genie has to disguise himself as the boy's woodchuck scout friend, Gene.
I'm surprised that these three boys have clothes that are not red, blue, and green.
Yeah, it seems weird. And they're going to go outside and play now. And they go outside and play and make all their most of the rest of their wishes for, like, a tiny little amusement park playground or whatever.
The thing is, Scrooge is rich. He could buy them an amusement park. He could buy them a hang glider. He could buy them a train.
Yeah, but Scrooge is the type of rich that the only thing that matters to him is the high score. And that's why, you know, he won't do nice things for the kids because that would infinitesimally lower his high score.
But yeah, they even said that, you know, maybe we should go home. They'll have dinner ready. We should stop playing for today. Nah. Because they're kids.
Yeah. So stay and eat that entire Sunday, the four of them. Hopefully they gave the genie some.
Yeah. I was going to say, the five of them. And because they've been out all day, and it's presumably all night, playing around with the genie and their wishes and their small amusement park and their giant ice cream sundae, Scrooge isn't happy that the kids have been out all day and plans to punish them when they get home. Luckily, they have a genie, and I believe it is Louis that uses one of his wishes to get Scrooge not to punish them. Not the best use of a wish, but considering the circumstances, they didn't really have much of a choice.
I mean, I don't know. We see that Scrooge is, like, really given to anger and long grudges, so I don't know. Maybe you would use a wish for that.
So, yeah, and it works. You know, as soon as the kids are home, it's, welcome home, children. Now go upstairs and go to bed because you've been tired. You've been playing all day. It's like, you showed them, haven't you, sir? What?
I like that he offers them ice cream. Can I get you anything? Do you want some dinner, some ice cream? And they're like, no, we're full. You could tell that they had enough.
They get gorged on ice cream.
Yeah.
And the kids are planning to sleep and get into PJs and whatnot. And Genie is spooked as an owl flies by the window. And we get the backstory on Murloc. Murloc was a great sorcerer in the olden days, was Genie's previous master before Kali Baba stole the lamp, and is because he has a magic talisman, he has unlimited wishes, which, good. I mean, it's good if you have a genie, you have unlimited wishes.
Yeah.
And, yeah, well, how can he still be alive? That was centuries ago. Oh, his first wish was to live forever.
Yeah, maybe.
There's some give and take on that.
Yeah, yeah, you kind of have to wish for, like, eternal youth and eternal health as well.
Yeah, if you live forever, you're still gonna age and decay.
You just won't be able to die. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so we go through, Genie goes through all of the, like you said, the horrible things that he's done in his life. So basically every world disaster that you read in the history books was because of Murloc.
Yeah. Not a fun guy, it seems. And for really petty reasons, too.
But Murloc and Dijon have made it to Scrooge's house from the desert. And Murloc wants Dijon to go into the house and get the lamp, but again, Dijon's a coward. So Murloc decides to do it himself, disguising himself as a rat. Again, we've seen his magic talisman a bit gives him not only the ability to have unlimited wishes, but has him change shape. So we saw him as a hawk earlier in the movie. Now we see him as a rat. We see him transform into many different animals throughout the course of this movie. It's now Webby's turn to play with Genie as they have a tea party. And Genie, I read about tea parties. And we get the description of the Boston Tea Party.
Yeah.
Complete with the same non-PC imagery that the original Boston Tea Party had.
Yeah. And
we'll just leave it at that. I'm going to give a pass only because Genie read it in a book and that's how he thinks things are. He doesn't really know that yet.
And also it was the 90s when we still hadn't entirely started to reckon with that. I will say that I dislike this scene because it is another Webby is the girl scene. Like, it's okay that she takes the genie in to play tea party, but then he's like, you know, well, how do you play tea party? And then she's like, well, you pour the tea and then you sip it very slowly and you talk to your guests. And she starts talking to her doll. And the genie immediately gets angry. Like, he's actively angry that, like, this isn't a game. Where's the blood and death and action and boy stuff?
Because, again, the only tea party he knows of is the Boston Tea Party. So he thinks all tea parties are like that. But to the terms of talking to the guests, he says, well, your guests don't talk back. Got it? And he says, oh, you gave me an idea to use my last wish. No. I wish for all my toys to come to life. Because child.
I want to step back for just half a second because we skipped something when we talked about Murloc coming in as a rat. He comes in as a rat and Mrs. Beakley sees him and immediately grabs a broom and starts chasing him screaming, I hate rats! And trying to kill him. And I was watching this movie with a friend, and my friend pointed out, they're all ducks. They work with all kinds of animals, but they're racist against rats.
It's the Mickey Pluto thing of some animals are sentient, and we can work with them. Some animals are not sentient, and we treat them like animals.
I don't know. It's just something about it made me laugh of, like,
considering that their boss is a mouse?
Yeah.
Anyway, so Webby makes the wish, all the animals come to life, and at first Webby's like, yay, I finally get to meet all of you. And because most of them are stuffed animals, and they're just wild animals now, they just happen to look like toys, and they're running around all over the house. And as this is all happening, Murloc loses a lot of his evil luster in this scene. Because up to this point, he's been a very menacing character. And here he becomes comic relief. As the toys, especially this toy tiger, is chasing him throughout the entire house. You have a magic talisman. Turn into something else.
Yeah, it's like turn into a lion or something. But he ends up getting eaten by the little stuffed tiger.
Oh, yeah. As this is happening, Launchpad is on his way to pick up Scrooge to go to the ball. Apparently, the people who run the Adventurer's Ball will not take no for an answer and are sending Launchpad to go get Scrooge. Scrooge doesn't want to go because, again, he doesn't have the treasure. Even threatens to send Duckworth in his place to go to the party.
And Duckworth looks kind of like, okay, I can go to a fancy party.
Maybe they're looking for a new butler.
Yeah, maybe they'll treat me better.
So as this is happening, the toys are running amok. Scrooge gets in. Scrooge finds out all about this, seeing all the toys running around. Wondering what's the deal. Who's responsible for all this? As the boys are running in, the jig is up. The kids only have one wish left, and it's Louise. And since the jig is up, doesn't have much of a choice in the matter, so he uses his last wish to turn everything back to normal. Scrooge is now aware that the oil lamp that they had this whole time was, in fact, the genie lamp of Kalibaba.
And Scrooge immediately goes out of his mind trying to figure out what his three wishes should be.
I could have the world's biggest diamond mine. No, all the diamond mines. No, the entire mining industry. Because he's Scrooge McDuck and all he thinks about is money.
Yeah, every one of his wishes is just for more money. When he's going through the possibilities. In fact, he says he wants the whole mining industry, and the genie's like, no, too big. Stop. But he does wish for the treasure of Kalibaba back.
Yep.
Because he's going to take it to the ball, and he's going to prove to them that he found it.
He's going to rub it in their faces.
And he's going to take the genie with him, because the genie is too valuable. He's not going to risk it. He's going to keep the lamp on him at all times. But that means that the genie has to go back into the lamp, which is the only thing he's asked for the entire movie, is please don't make me go back in the lamp.
Even the kissing, no, you know, leave him here. Don't put him back into the lamp. He's our friend. And Scrooge goes full cruelty. A genie isn't a person. It's a thing in the lamp.
Which means that Scrooge is now not only for child labor, but also slavery.
I believe OG Scrooge would do that.
Yeah, it wasn't out of character for OG Scrooge, but I'm like, wow, you're really taking the ultra-capitalist thing, like, to its unfortunate, tragic, and logical conclusion.
Murlock is now free from his stuffed animal prison. He's going to go to the ball, too. And Dijon is going to go with him, and they're going to get the lamp at the ball. Genie wants a party. Like, hey, we're two single guys. We can have a good time at the party. Genie begging to get out of the lamp. Said, fine, you can get out of the lamp, but you have to stay out of sight. Having him shrink down and putting him into a bush, saying, nope, no parties for you. You're going to stay right here until I come back. Let him party. He's been trapped in the lamp for 1,000 years. Let him hobnob. Let him rub elbows.
But he's not a person. He's a thing.
Genie tries to enjoy the party as much as he can, grabbing whatever food he can get off the dishes that pass by him. And as he tries to clean his face with a napkin, he ends up grabbing the robe of Murlock. So he has to run over to Scrooge to warn him about Murlock. And Scrooge isn't having any of it because he doesn't know about Murlock, doesn't care to know about Murlock. He wants to rub the treasure in everybody's face. But as this is happening, he's pulled off stage as Murlock is chasing after him. For a guy that says he's smarter than the Smarties and tougher than the Toughies, it's a little slow on the uptake here.
Yeah, the thing about it is that if he'd have let the genie kind of just, like, sit next to him in the helicopter, the genie probably would have filled him in. But he made him go into the lamp and then, like, shoved the lamp into a pocket, you know?
But like we just said, he doesn't view the genie as a person. So why would he listen to him?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what gets him into trouble. He would have been ready for all of this.
And even saying, Genie's begging, hey, you have to wish us out of here. No, I'm not wasting my wish. What's more important, your treasure or your life?
Yeah, this kind of annoyed me. Because, you know, it's the old your money or your life joke. And it's done so poorly here. Like, the timing just does not work. The joke just does not land. I mean, maybe it lands if you're 7 and it's the first time you've heard the joke.
Scrooge refuses to wish them out of there. Genie throws the lamp onto a chandelier and they all, and zapping himself and Scrooge into the lamp just to make sure that Murloc doesn't get to them. We never see inside the lamp. And I think this was a good opportunity to actually see what Genie's life is like inside the lamp. Maybe get a little something for the audience to root for the Genie, you know?
Well, here's the problem. If you make it awful enough to understand why he wants out, then you make Scrooge more of a monster than he already is at this point. But if it's like a, you know, I Dream of Genie scenario, or it's like a bunch of pillow-strewn lounge area, then you're like, well, doesn't look that bad. So I think it's probably better that they didn't show it. But when they come out of the lamp again after the danger is passed, Scrooge does make a comment that it smells absolutely awful in there, and the Genie's like, well, you stop smelling it after a couple of hundred years.
Anyway, so we finally get our... Again, if you've seen Aladdin, you know where this is going. Genie just wants a life. He doesn't want to be a prisoner anymore. He wants what the boys have. He wants freedom.
And a family. And to go play.
And a CD player. And a personal sound system.
Yeah.
And Scrooge kind of... Alright, I get it. And again, this is a few years before Aladdin came out. So if you saw this movie and then saw Aladdin, you'd be saying... Little me was like, yeah, I kind of saw the story already.
Murloc and Dijon end up following Scrooge as they leave. You know, they've been lying in wait. And they end up kind of... Murloc ends up fighting with Scrooge over the lamp. They knock into, like, a room service cart. And two objects fall down. One is the lamp, and one is a gravy boat that looks almost exactly like the lamp. Dijon gets the real thing, and Scrooge ends up taking the gravy boat.
Dijon hears the Genie talking from the lamp. Mr. McDuck, where are you? Where are we? Rubs the lamp, and now he's the master. He has wishes.
And he originally is going to give it back to Murloc, though, because Murloc is the master. And then the Genie, in a kind of smart move, is like, oh, no, you're the master. What do you want, master? You don't have to give it to him, master, you know.
Yeah. Playing to Dijon's own greed, because throughout the entire movie, he's just stealing everything he can get his hands on.
Yeah, he keeps trying to take bits of the treasure and shoving it in his pants and stuff.
And as Scrooge is getting out of there with Launchpad, they end up back at the money bin, and it's not his money bin anymore. As Dijon's first wish was for to find his treasure, which is Scrooge's fortune. So Scrooge now no longer has any money, as all of Scrooge's money is now Dijon's money. And he now owns everything that Scrooge owns. Not only the money bin, but the mansion, and all of his businesses.
Yeah, so now all the nephews, Webby, Mrs. Beakley, Duckworth, and all that, they're all homeless now, because they've been kicked out of the mansion.
And Scrooge has been thrown in jail for trespassing.
Fortunately, everybody has just enough money in all their piggy banks and savings and everything to bail out Scrooge.
Yeah, and Scrooge even says, you know, I'll pay you back when we get back to the mansion. You don't have a mansion anymore? Dijon has the mansion? Which completely breaks Scrooge. Like, he has lost everything in 1 second.
But the nephews point out that Scrooge set up the security for that money bin. He knows it better than anybody, and Dijon probably didn't know enough to wish for that to change. So while everybody considers him the owner of the stuff, the security system around it probably wasn't part of the wish. So they decide we're going to break into the money bin.
Scrooge, again, you're supposed to be smarter than the Smarties and tougher than the Toughies. Why is your password cash?
Yeah. Remember, it was the early 90s when we knew nothing about, you know, all my passwords in the 90s were like cat, you know? It's like,
if anybody knew anything about Scrooge McDuck, they would have broken in that money bin years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're able to get in by using the secret password cash. And thanks to the instructions given to the boys by Scrooge, they are able to eventually disarm the entire security system. It is in some parts funny and some parts not so funny. Using Webby to walk through the vents to get into the room, the main security room. Clever, but it has spiders and cobwebs, and Webby is girl.
I really hate how much girl Webby is, or, you know, stereotype girl. You know, don't take that out of context. It's just a bunch of grown men writing what they think a little girl is like.
So yeah, they, thanks to using their marbles, are able to completely dismantle the security system. That joke, I mean, I did not expect that joke to come back, but it works in this movie. And so Scrooge is able to break in. That cane must be made of some vibranium, because it's able to take out a metal door.
That's gotta be one expensive cane.
That's gotta be one expensive cane. You are up on the moon, looking for treasure you've gotta see.
He can pogo jump on that thing.
Yeah.
On the moon. Side note, the fact that they made the moon theme into a lullaby on the new DuckTales was amazing.
So good. So good. I love the use of the moon theme in the new DuckTales.
Look to the stars, my darling baby boys. Life is strange and vast, filled with wonders and joys. Face each new sun with eyes clear and true. Afraid of the unknown, because I'll face it all with you.
Anyway, moving on. Scrooge gets the lamp, though, for a minute.
Yeah, he breaks in. He's able to get back into his main business room and get the lamp back, but Murlock has been on Scrooge this entire time disguised as a cockroach. And he's able to grab the lamp for himself. And again, we've mentioned he has the magic talisman that gives him unlimited wishes. And the first thing he wishes for is the swine that is Dijon to get turned into one. And he wishes for the money bin to be transformed into his old castle, as Genie calls it, Casa de Cuckoo.
Yeah.
So the entire money bin, money and all, are turned into this very demon-ish castle. The kids are still in the money bin. So the stairwells are also getting transformed as all of this is going on. And his next wish is that he wants to go home in his new home. So the entire money bin castle transform thing lifts into the air and is now flying to wherever Murlock's home is. Or was. Whatever. Yeah. As this is happening, Scrooge is trying to stop the whole thing. You know, and Murlock wishes Scrooge to go away. Kick him, get him out of my house, was the word. And Christopher Lloyd's delivery of that line is amazing. It's probably the best delivery of any line he has in this entire movie.
Yeah, easily. The wind comes up to oblige Murlock and toss Scrooge off of the fortress.
But Scrooge is also able to grab the lamp as he's falling. Which means Murlock now has to transform into a griffin of all things to go after the lamp. And since he now sees that the kids are there, after he's taking care of Scrooge, he's going to take care of the kids. Murlock does gain a bit of that menacing that menacingness back in this ending scene. But it still hurt from the fact that he was comic relief earlier in the movie.
It's weird trying to do both with your villain. Because most of the time he's evil, and then there's that section in the middle where it's just slapstick comic relief, and it's a very odd disconnect.
Mm-hmm. So now there's this big fight above the skies, in the skies here. They actually show the curvature of the Earth. If they were up that high, they'd probably both die.
But, well, Scrooge can also breathe on the moon with no helmet, so it's fine.
They explain this. It's gum. You saw the episode.
Now, Gyro, why in blazes are we chewing this awful blue muck?
Why, that's Oxy-Chew, Mr. McDuck. It's my latest invention. Oxygen-flavored taffy. 5 good chews and you can breathe on the lunar surface without a spacesuit. Oh, and it tastes great, too.
That, Gyro, is a matter of opinion.
I've been able to survive in the thin lunar atmosphere thanks to Gyro's Oxy-Chew. It provides oxygen, water, and nutrition, and tastes terrible. Black licorice, worst flavor ever.
I played the game, and they explain it that way. So anyway, there's no moon, there's no licorice-flavored gum in this movie. So anyway, Scrooge is able to grab the medallion and knock it out of Murloc's hands as Murloc now transforms back into normal and falls because he's no longer a griffin. He'll be fine. He's immortal. He'll be fine. He'll survive, right?
Yeah, I mean, no, he will, because that was done by a wish and not the medallion. That wasn't his magical power. He just wished to live forever. So
he doesn't need the medallion to live forever. I mean, he'll survive the fall.
Yeah. He just won't have his powers.
He won't be happy about it, but it'll be a while before he finds his medallion again.
Yeah.
So he now has the lamp. He has to make a wish or he'll die. So he makes his second wish to wish his family and his bin back in Duckburg the way it was. And there it is, you know. Everything is back the way it was. It's no longer Dijon's. He never actually wishes for any of his stuff back. I just noticed this.
Yeah.
He just says, I wish for everything to go back to my bin to go back to where it was. And it does have Scrooge's little money sign on it, but he never actually wished for any of his stuff back.
Eh.
Eh, whatever. Genie made a guess on that.
Yeah. Maybe Genie gave him, like, a freebie.
A freebie. So, yeah, everyone's back to normal. Everything is back to where it was.
Except for... And Dijon does turn back from a pig. That's right.
Dijon does turn back from being a pig to his normal doggy self.
Yeah.
But there's still a matter of the lamp. Scrooge still has one wish left, and he's seen what the dangers of the lamp can do. So he's deciding what he's going to do. He decides that he's going to end the magic once and for all. He first thinks he's going to wish for the lamp to be buried in the center of the earth.
And the genie absolutely flips out. As do the boys and Webby. They're like, no, you cannot imprison him in the center of the earth forever.
Yeah, we'll throw the lamp into the bin and we'll dress him like a boy and he'll be our friend forever. And he says, no, we're not going to do that. I decided what my last wish is going to be, and Genie, this is your last wish too. And he wishes for the genie to turn into a little boy. Not as great as the version in Aladdin, but by wishing the genie to turn into a boy, he no longer has magic. At least in Aladdin, when the genie was free, he still had magic.
Yeah. This is like he's just a boy. He's just a regular child. With some cool 90s duds.
And some old man eyebrows.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he's happy though. He's happy that he gets to be a little boy. He gets to actually do little boy things and actually have a life that's not trapped in a lamp.
And the lamp disintegrates because there's no more magic.
And yeah, the he's the genie's happy. He gets to have he gets his freedom. He gets to be just a normal little boy, and they're all gonna go play, and they want Scrooge to go play with them. Then no, I'm gonna swim in my money because that's what I do because I'm Scrooge McDuck. But as we said, Dijon is now no longer a pig, and he is in the center of the richest duck in the world with all of the richest duck in the world's money.
So he immediately begins stuffing it in his pants and trying to get away with it.
But he overstuffed his pants as the money starts leaking out of the pants.
Yeah.
Which, again, is a running gag in this entire movie.
Yeah.
And the movie ends with Scrooge chasing Dijon all through Duckburg while money falls out of his pants as the DuckTales theme song plays.
And Scrooge screams, "Stop those pants!"
Then, yeah, that was DuckTales the movie.
I was absolutely bored by this movie. As was the friend who watched it with me. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of times when I giggled. There's a joke at the beginning where they're looking for the pyramid and they're like, "It should be right here at the base of Mount Bad Dude." And I thought that was cute. And there were a couple of other lines that were like that. The egg beater one and stuff. But for the most part, one, this is mostly a story that they would do better 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Two, what story there is not very deep or interesting. I think we made it far more interesting in the telling than the movie actually makes it, to be honest. I had to fight to stay awake through this one. It just... I don't know. It just... The plot did not fall to me. And here's the thing is, the other thing that we decided on was that this feels like a kids movie, as in we made it for kids and we didn't think anyone else should be watching this. It was like, once you're over the age of about 10, this movie really doesn't hold anything for you. There are no jokes in there that would make adults laugh, really, you know, two or three, but for the most part, there's no emotional resonance to the story. The closest thing you get is Genie doesn't want to be trapped in the lamp, but they don't even really delve into that with any great depth. It's just like, oh no, I don't want to go back in. You know, he's more whiny than the true horror of being trapped alone for that long.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, we would get a better version of this story 2 years later.
Yeah. But even without that, even without that comparison, and boy does this fail in that comparison, but even without that, it also felt like most of the actors were phoning it in. Like, the regular cast did their regular cast jobs. Mm-hmm. But the guest stars, I mean, Dijon was pretty fun, but this may be the most boring performance I have ever experienced from either Christopher Lloyd or Rip Taylor. Rip Taylor has almost no energy, and Christopher Lloyd says almost every line the exact same way.
Christopher Lloyd works best when he's allowed to improvise. If you see a lot of his, you know, in Taxi or in Back to the Future or even in Roger Rabbit, when he's allowed to improvise a little bit, he's a lot better. And I think in this one, he probably wasn't allowed to improvise as much.
I don't think at all, because he has, like, no jokes in this movie. Mm-hmm. Even when he's the comic relief, it's just animation slapstick. It's not Christopher Lloyd.
And a lot of what made Christopher Lloyd work is his facial expressions. And they did not translate any of his facial expressions into the character.
Yeah, you can tell that they did not use him as an animation reference. Mm-hmm. Rip Taylor, you can tell he's trying to do... But they didn't let him walk the same line that they would let Robin Williams walk. Robin Williams, they let him play around and then took kind of the most family-friendly version of that. But there's also still stuff that, like, adults will laugh at and, you know, kids will laugh because it's said funny, but they won't really understand the full context, you know. Rip Taylor is just, like... You know, that thing about the egg beater is, like, the most interesting thing he gets to say the entire movie. It honestly half the time doesn't even sound like his typical comedy voice. You know, it just kind of sounds like a dude talking half the time. Rather than that, like, high energy Rip Taylor kind of thing.
So let's go back to that question I asked earlier. If instead of Murloc, we had June Foray as Magic of the Spell, and instead of Dijon, we had the Beagle Boys, would this be a better movie?
I think so, because we're already acquainted with the villains. There's already jokes there that you can use, callbacks for the regular viewers.
Mm-hmm.
It still has the magic element, because you got Magica. It still has the fighting over a treasure element, because that's the Beagle Boys.
Mm-hmm.
You could have almost the exact same story with a different magical MacGuffin.
I think for me, it would have gotten you more into the spirit of it if they had actually played the theme song during that part where they're going into the beginning of the pyramid. Since, as I was saying, it feels like the opening of the TV show.
Yeah, if they'd have made that, like, rapid scene a little longer and worked the theme song into the background there, that would have, I think it would have given the scene more energy and made me like it a little more. But, like, they really also go all in on how awful Scrooge is.
Yeah, this is the worst of Scrooge as a character.
At least the DuckTales version. He's worse in Mickey's Christmas Carol, of course. This is, like, possibly the worst I've ever seen Scrooge McDuck in the DuckTales context. He is mean. He doesn't care about the boys or Webby. He is absolutely just cruel and vicious and standoffish. You don't get any of the feeling of the uncle relationship.
And I've mentioned before, for a guy that says he's smarter than the smarties, he's a little slow on the uptake in this entire movie.
Yeah. There is probably more time given to Dijon and Murloc than there is to Scrooge in this movie. As far as just screen time, Scrooge is like an afterthought. And I know it's DuckTales and it's the boys' story, but it's an adventure movie about going on an adventure with Uncle Scrooge. So Uncle Scrooge should probably be in this movie more than he is.
Yeah, I mean, more, even in the show, most of the attention goes to the kids because it is a kid's show. And I think that hurts this movie more than anything else, is the attention that the kids get. Especially the lack of character development that the kids have in general.
But also, what do the kids do to move the plot along, really? Not a lot.
They get the genie from A to B.
Yeah, but they don't actually, like, help solve anything. One of the best parts of the original DuckTales was when, like, one of the boys would be like, let's consult the Woodchuck Scout book, and then they would. And they would figure it out, and they would be like, you know, hey, Uncle Scrooge, we figured it out. It says here in our book that whatever.
They do that once in this movie, and then we get the marble joke for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, but it would have been interesting if, like, one of them remembered something they read about genies that helped do the... But really, honestly, kind of the solution to this movie is just punching.
And that doesn't feel like DuckTales.
Yeah, DuckTales was always a show about kind of... It was an adventure show, yeah, but it was an adventure show much in the way that Indiana Jones is an adventure. You know, you figure things out. You look at maps and you figure out puzzles and...
It says so in the theme song, solve a mystery.
Yeah. There is no mystery in this movie.
I am with you that much like a lot of the other movies we've reviewed this month, this really kind of goes into this is the nostalgia bin.
Yeah, I think the show was better than this movie. I don't think that this movie... True. Do not let this be your first entrance into OG DuckTales. Please. Because yeah, it really is kind of the basic, you know. It's the foundation of DuckTales, but it doesn't have the flavor.
The only, and it, the fact that this is a such a self-contained story that you don't even need to watch this to watch the show.
Yeah, none of this except really comes back in the show.
The final episode, they do bring Dijon back in one of the final episodes. But again, that's a one-off episode that you really don't need to watch. And probably was only made to sell the movie on VHS.
Yeah.
And that's about it. Again.
So, magic, no magic? Where do we come down on this?
I want to say magic, but the fact that this just doesn't... It feels like OG DuckTales and doesn't feel like OG DuckTales. It's like you said, it's OG DuckTales, but the worst parts of it.
Yeah, I would say this is only gonna have magic to people who really really love OG DuckTales and are completionists.
Agreed. So let's say, yeah, I'm gonna say that this is just the nostalgia. So I'm gonna say no magic.
Yeah.
And I hate it. That hurts me saying it, cuz I love
it. It really does, cuz we both are huge fans of DuckTales in general, but this film, they just kind of face planted on it.
So yeah, and that it hurts to put this in the no magic category. It
hurts. Yes. Skip it unless you are a completionist and just need any tiny little hit of nostalgia into your veins.
So yeah, let's move on to next week. We're gonna keep talking about ducks because I'm in the hype of WandaVision and in the hype of Falcon and Winter Soldier. There's another show debuting on Disney Plus, Mighty Ducks Game Changers. So let's go back in time and review the original. Let's discuss the original Mighty Ducks.
Not the cartoon, the actual OG live-action movie.
Yes, the OG live-action movie with Emilio Estevez. Let's see if this old-school kid sports movie still has the magic in it. And we will talk to you all then. Bye!
Bye!
Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at RewatchTheMagic.
And of course, new episodes every week at RewatchingTheMagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it. Kiki, this is episode 69.
Nice.